This is episode 191, recorded December 30th, 2013.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Yes, our last podcast of 2013.
Yeah, I guess it's going to be an early one for some of you, but we're going to release this on New Year's Day, aren't we?
Oh, I guess so. We're recording it in December, though.
Yeah, yeah.
We skipped last week, and we meant to give you a heads up, and I don't think
I put one on Facebook, but not everyone will get it.
Well, we meant to record it to put it on iTunes.
We did.
iTunes wasn't letting anybody upload anything.
They were doing some kind
for
of,
about a
I don't
week.
Know what, maintenance or something?
Something, I don't know.
But we're back.
So, we didn't get to do one last week, but plus, it was Christmas, so yeah, we figured so that was a pretty good excuse.
Very crazy, mm-hmm. with relatives from out of the country being in town, and weddings and all sorts of things in the family, and
it was a busy
not
week.
Our immediate family, but in the extended family, that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's been a busy time. But
we hope you all had a lovely Christmas.
Or a lovely whatever you celebrate. Or
Solstice. Lovely solstice.
I guess Hanukkah is long gone this year. It was early. Mm-hmm. So whatever you celebrated, if you celebrated anything, I hope it was a happy one.
And if you didn't celebrate anything,
I hope it was a happy week.
Yeah.
Or a couple
I'm
of
sorry.
Weeks.
Bummer for you.
Okay.
Okay.
So who have we got lined up?
We have...
Oh, we should say about this first, and then we'll say whoever else. Okay. So the live show, well, sort of live show, where we have a show where people can contribute live, but then it's actually recorded. So I don't know why I'm calling it a live show, but... A show in which many people can participate.
More interactive show.
Yeah, where lots of people can participate. That sounds good. We're going to try to do that really soon. In fact, we're looking at February 1st.
Which is a Saturday.
Yeah. And we're going to try to do it early. It would be 7:30 a.m. our time, which is Mountain Standard Time in the U.S.
So you'll have to figure out what time that works out to wherever you are.
But if you can participate, we're going to set up a Google Hangout at that time. So more information is pending, but... Matt in Western Australia is going to help out with that. He's looking into some things. Sean in North Carolina has offered to help with setting up the Google Hangout as well. So probably be drawing on their expertise and so on. So if you want to be in the show, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have you send some prepared questions, but you're going to ask them on the show. So... That means I get a chance to think about them and so on, which is sometimes good because when I shoot from the hip, you never know what you're going to get. No, because sometimes I can give you a better answer, better detailed answer, instead of just saying, I don't really know. Do any of you know? Which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it's nicer to be able to, you know, think about it ahead of time. So you're going to send us a couple of questions you want to talk about, and then we're going to do it live, and it will be recorded audio-visually. For the first time in Aquarimax history, we're going to have a podcast that is audiovisual. What we'll probably do is release an audio-only version of it on iTunes as we usually do, but we'll also have an audiovisual version of it up on YouTube.
So you can watch it.
You can watch all the Aquarimaxers around the world participating. So we're excited. Thank you to Matt for his offer of help and to Sean for his offer of help. We're looking forward to it. So February 1st, 7:30 Mountain Standard U.S. time. And, or will it be Mountain Daylight Standard time? I don't know.
I don't know. I can't
never remember.
Keep that straight.
Anyway, it'll be one of those. We'll get it worked out. But we have a little over a month to work out all the little details. But just keep that in mind. If you want to do it, what we'll have you do is email us your willingness to do so. And then we'll construe that as permission to send your email to Matt in Perth, Western Australia. And he's going to do some organizational things with that. So, yeah, let us know if you want to be a participant. A couple of you already have, but if you already have, please let us know again. Okay? And in terms of the rest of the show, we have...
Sean in North Carolina, and Tom in Provo, and Tony in New York, and Mick in Carnforth. I almost said in the Carnforth instead of Carnforth.
Well, there is only one of them.
That's true. We have determined there's only one Carnforth. It is unique. And Matt in Perth.
Which really we just talked about what he was had said. My fault.
Whoa. Yeah. You put him in the list.
I did. Because
you're so
naughty. We wanted to talk about him. Sorry.
Okay. Sorry, Matt. Okay. Dr. Bob in Boston and Rob in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Cool. Okay, so last week, not last week, but the last podcast, episode 190, Kelly had asked Sean in North Carolina.
Oh, I did, because he was using Britishisms, huh?
Yes.
I don't even remember what he said now.
I don't remember specifically either, but you wanted to know if he was from the UK somewhere, or had lived there, or whatever.
Oh, he was watching BBC.
And this is what he said.
He says, no, born and raised in the States, but I did live in England for a bit. See, what a good ear I have. Mm-hmm. I do have a fairly deep affinity for their radio programming, Radio 4 and Radio 3 in particular. If you have troubles getting to sleep, give... And then he's got an address.
Yeah, and which we'll put up on the website. Yeah,
I wonder what they have.
We're going to have to check it out, too.
Yeah. I love BBC. BBC is awesome. Anything that can spawn Doctor Who.
He says, give this link a listen. So, yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
So...
Thank you, Sean, for your response.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun.
Okay, so we've got Tom in Provo.
Tom says, I suppose I should have guessed that you would not give me carte blanche to use metal plant weights, but then there it is. It's just one of those things people always say you shouldn't do because there is a certain logic to it, but I never see actual evidence that weights have hurt fish. Maybe if there were something like statistics showing that fish raised without tank weights are 37% less likely to get into Harvard or Yale than fish raised without. To me, it feels like a superstition.
Well, we'll keep going.
Okay. I've been trying to track down the Dan Walstead comments on the issue. Do you remember where you read them or even what forum they were in?
Okay, I went back and looked and I found a couple of different things that she said about it, and I will post those. They're from Aquatic Plant Central.
Okay.
And she does say some specific things. I'll include the exact links to those threads so you can look it up. But she was... she discouraged the use of lead weights in both of them.
Okay.
In Aquaria. So I do believe that in her book she also goes into some detail about the toxicity of lead to aquarium plants.
Oh, to the plants?
Yes.
Interesting. So, I guess they're soaking up everything in the water.
Some plants can sequester large amounts of lead. I think it varies on based on species.
But I guess that's part of why people put plants in is to soak up toxins. So
right.
They're soaking up toxins.
Mm-hmm. I think it's water lettuce, maybe, that has this amazing amount of... if lead is high in the water, its dry weight can be incredibly high in terms of percentage of lead that makes up its dry weight.
Do they use that for...
It can be used for bioremediation.
Environmental cleanup? Yeah.
That's what I've heard.
Interesting. He also says, not that I don't take your word at face value, but apparently you do wear gloves to put up the Christmas lights.
Actually, Kelly likes to exaggerate a bit about
that. I never exaggerate. I don't know what you're talking about.
So I don't ever recall after...
But you do always tell the kids, stop touching the tree!
And I tell them to wash their hands and stuff, but that's what it says on the labels, too, to wash their hands when you touch them, so...
It's true. And he says, no fish were hurt in the writing of this email, at least none that I know of. And he sent the links. No, he didn't. You sent the link.
The links are there on the page.
Sorry. Okay, Tom, thank you. Alrighty, we have an email from Tony in New York. He says, in episode 190, I have to say that you said some things that were very shocking to me, and not just the part about my NC-17 Nerite tank.
That was you. That was all you.
I don't know what you're talking about. He's just exaggerating and Nerite. I don't know. I'm completely innocent. Russ, I am pretty sure I heard you say that everything's not about fish. And he put 3 exclamation points.
Well, I can neither confirm nor deny that because I don't remember what I said.
And Kelly, I heard you utter something equally disorienting. Something about how you and Russ don't have room for any more tanks.
Oh, the humanity.
Gosh, goodness me, sometimes it is up to your old pal, Tony from New York, cue Aquarilad superhero music, okay, to set things right. Russ, first let's remember the wise words of the Pet Fish Talk guys when they asserted officially on their podcast that it really is all about the fish.
Oh, yeah.
And he says, hooray, I knew you'd remember. Phew, that was a close one. And Kelly, as the beta breeding project taught us, there is always room for a few dozen more tanks. A few dozen. Getting rid of that space-stealing couch is just one quick idea for freeing up more aquarium space.
Hey, there you go.
Yes, who needs to sit down?
And what about the love seat? We can get rid of that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. But he says, but I know you probably are going to want a place to sit down and enjoy your fish, so here's an alternative I found for you on Aquavista. A wall-mounted aquarium. Which are very cool, actually.
And he put the link up here.
Yeah. Our local fish store actually has one of these in their bathroom.
Yep.
It's kind of funny.
A couple of mouth-brooding betas in it last time I was in there.
That would actually be really cool.
Yeah.
We've actually talked about if we ever, you know, in fantasy land, get to design and build our own house, one of the walls that divides rooms, like, I don't know, a living room from an entryway or something, should just be a giant aquarium.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. But you know what? I think that when we get our t-shirts going,
mm-hmm,
we should make a special t-shirt for Tony,
mm-hmm,
that is his Aqualad t-shirt, so mm-hmm that when fish somewhere need help, he can dash into a phone booth and put his aquarium. We can make it red and blue and put a big AL
on
it. Yeah.
And we could make some Aqualas versions.
Yeah, yeah. Or it's just Tony's.
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe just for Tony.
Just for Tony, because he's a queer lad.
Okay.
And it'll be cool. And we'll make you a theme song.
And maybe when you push on a button on the shirt, it plays the theme song.
Yeah, see? That would be cool. Okay. He goes on, actually, I really loved 190, and I have so much I'd like to say about it. First, Dr. Bob, parts of your house are pretty cold, like mine. Are there any fish that you keep in an unheated tank at 55? If so, let me know. I need ideas for my basement fish room. So far, I think goldfish or native fishes are good ideas, because that's the ultimate way to save electricity on heating a fish tank. No heater!
You know, there are some other ideas, too. What about paradise fish?
Yeah, those are nice.
They really benefit from a cool period, I hear, in the winter. And that would not be below their tolerance at all.
How low do they go?
I've heard they can tolerate freezing temperatures.
So they're like limbo fish.
Like, they can go really low. Frozen in ice, but...
Sorry.
Well, you know, they come from northern China, not just southern China, so...
That's really cold, actually, over there.
In Korea and stuff like that, too. So they can get a skin of ice on the surface of the water and not kill them.
Kind of like goldfish.
Yeah.
Wow. Anything else that you can think of right now?
Well, let's see. I wonder about white clouds. White clouds can stand pretty cool water, too. I don't know if
they're from mountain streams.
Cold. Yeah. Yeah. But they certainly do well in unheated tanks.
So okay. So something to look into, too.
Yeah.
He says, Russ, thanks for all the hints on guppies, ghost shrimp, and nerite breeding. I'll let you know what I decide to do once I've puzzled this one out. I suspect that going brackish will disrupt my biofilter, but then again, maybe it will wipe out planaria, too. Guppies are really tempting, too. Someone at the pet shop said I should obtain only males to avoid offspring overload. Good idea, but baby guppies sound like so much fun. Plus, you would just have really unhappy, frustrated male guppies who would beat on each other all the time.
It does happen. I was quarantining some male guppies once, just two of them. And after about a week, they started beating on each other. I had to separate them.
Yeah, they're just... They can't handle... They could never be monks. How about that? Although, no monk guppies.
I've seen people set up tanks of just male guppies, too. Maybe it's the fancy
guppies. Do they replace them, like, every 2 weeks?
Maybe the fancy guppies don't care as much. Hmm. Because their tails weigh them down and they're so overbred. I don't know. It depends.
It's because they're, like, the fashion models, right? They just like to look at themselves in the mirror.
They're just narcissistic,
yeah,
to the point of not caring
guppies
about other fish.
Yeah. No, I'm just teasing. I'm sure there are plenty of very nice male models out in the world who don't just look in the mirror.
And aren't just narcissistic. Okay,
yes, good. They probably aren't listening to our podcast, though. If you are a male model and you are an aquarist, I want you to write in.
Okay, because you probably just offended any of them.
And I probably did. I'm sorry. I'm shockingly good at offending people sometime, because this is all improv and you just improv, you get what you get. It's just what comes out of my mouth.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well,
we love apologies. You male model aquarists. I'm sorry. Okay, baby guppies. He says, too bad I can't just reason with the fish and say, here now, guppies, go ahead and have enough babies to fill up the tank, but be sure to stop before we all run out of oxygen, okay?
That would be so nice.
That would be nice.
It is true that guppies will do some self-regulation of their population by decreasing body size, which decreases the amount of babies the females produce, and by increasing the predominance of males in the population, which of course also decreases the amount of females giving birth, to some degree, but not enough to really make for an optimally healthy tank by themselves.
All right. Oh, sorry, I just ran out of brain power. It went away. It's coming back. Okay, okay. I'm back. Sorry, I have a cold, so... See, that's another reason why I offend people easier when I have a cold, maybe, because I'm not thinking right.
Okay.
I have too many colds. Let's stop that.
Yeah.
He says, additionally, I wanted to chime in that I have removed all the lead plant weights from my aquarium. I wondered if they were interfering with the breeding of my red cherry shrimp. Couldn't say for sure, but just my two cents.
Good point, though. Could be. I know shrimp are very sensitive to metals in general, and lead is likely one of them.
Mm-hmm. And he says, finally, Scott from Texas. Let's talk Killies.
And this is in response to Scott's question about Killies specifically, and we appealed to Tony, and he is responding.
Yes. See, it's a queer lad to the rescue.
Exactly.
We need to make him a theme song.
Yeah.
We might have to say surface area in it.
One that's not shamelessly stolen from, like, say, Superman?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Okay. He says, first off, let me congratulate you on getting the gardenieri.
Gardenerai, most people say, I think. I know gardenieri sounds more Italian, it's true, but...
Come on, we're trying to be Latin, right?
Yeah.
Two pairs should be just right. Yes, I have kept this fish. Specifically, I have kept Fundulo Panchax gardenieri nigerianus misage. That doesn't look Latin, that looks Japanese. Misage. What is it?
It looks African to me, but...
Oh, see, I wouldn't... Sorry.
I don't know.
There I go, mixing up scientific names and languages. See, I'm just going to offend everybody in the world today.
I mean, there are many different African languages, so I have no idea which one it is. That's just...
Okay. I've also kept Fundulo Panchax marmoratus. Those are the murmuring fish. They like to complain.
They murmur. I think that means marbled in Latin. Marbled, like, you know.
Well, they're complaining about their marbles.
Okay.
Anyway, it should be similar to your fish. First off, these guys are plant spawners, so you could use a spawning mop, but I strongly suggest getting some Java moss instead. That's because infusoria will grow on this plant, and I really do think that's bound to help the fry out when they are small.
I agree. I love having Java moss in with fry. It really seems to do good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I thought you were going to say more.
Java moss is great for the infusoria, and it also helps reduce nitrates, and it's good shaving, good hiding places. It's all great.
It's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He says, second, some kinds of gardenieri will eat their own fry. A lot of people suggest setting up a separate tank for fry, but I have found that the opposite is best. Set up a separate tank for the adult killies and move the adults into it after they've spawned or after you see the eggs. My fry had a much greater survivability when I left them in the main tank after hatching. Again, I suspect the infusoria in that tank was a factor. Having a nice, stable, cycled tank definitely helped too.
Very good points.
Mm-hmm. It seems like it would be just a lot easier to just only move the parents, too, rather than trying to net out a bunch of teeny tiny wee wiggly things.
Very true. All other considerations aside, yeah. It is easier, but yeah, so that's another, all good points.
He says, my tank had no filter, just air stones. The Killies did fine in this as long as I kept the water quality up.
Makes sense.
I was told that Killies do best on live foods like blackworms and baby brine shrimp for the fry. I did not want to fool around with those foods. My Killies did fine on the average flake food, no problem. They did appreciate the Daphnia that I gave them, but I suspect that live foods were not necessary. I did have lots of luck feeding Hikari's First Bites, a powdered fry food. Killifish fry are probably big enough to take small Daphnia and are capable of tearing them apart with their teeth. I fed twice a day on the powdered fry food and occasionally added Daphnia. If I were to try breeding them again, I might try skipping the Daphnia. If you want to do Daphnia, you can try what I tried. A small 2-gallon container, aerated, fed with spirulina powder. The important thing with a Daphnia culture is keeping the water quality good. But keeping them is fun because it is really more like having another tank full of interesting aquatic life rather than, say, a box of worms or fruit flies or mosquito larvae. I leave that to the diehards. My Daphnia tanks were on a shelf above the Killy tank, so I used to water change my Daphnia tank straight into my 20 gallons so that the Daphnia and their food would water slide right down to the waning mouths of the Killies. This would sometimes cause my main tank's water quality to take a hit, but I'm convinced that this method could be fine-tuned. I think that's a cool idea.
It is. It's kind of like what I've seen systems set up, three-tiered systems, where you have an algae tank, where you're growing green water, essentially, in one tank. And under that tank, you have a Daphnia tank. And under that tank, you have a fish tank. And they eat the Daphnia.
So the green water is feeding the Daphnia, and the Daphnia are feeding the fish.
Yes, and you just drain the water from one into the other. From the top tier to the bottom tier.
That's a good idea.
Kind of like also Dave's aquaculture facility, the one he worked at.
In Hawaii?
In Kaneohe, the freshwater
one.
Oh,
uh-huh.
He had a kind of a drum, a big black plastic or rubber, I don't know what it was, some kind of drum that was on stilts or some kind of stand. So it was maybe 3 feet up in the air, 4 feet, something like that.
The bottom of the drum?
Yeah. And it had a spigot right at the bottom of it, kind of. And you just open that up and water and
Daphnia.
And I guess they were Moina and Daphnia. Right, basically, they're very similar. You could either pour that water directly into a jar or other container or through a net to kind of, you know, get rid of the water and keep them. Either way, it worked really well to clean it out, too, because you could let it run for a second to get this detritus that settled at the bottom to run out, and then you just collect the Moina.
Oh, it's a good idea.
Yeah, I wish I had one of those. That would be awesome.
Okay, next Christmas, I'll get you a giant barrel.
Okay.
How about that?
On a stand?
Yes.
This bigot at the bottom?
Yeah.
Full of Moina?
Full of Moina.
Okay, good.
And water, not just Moina.
Okay.
I don't think they would
Sounds
like it
good.
Very much.
Hope it fits in my stocking.
Yes, you might need a bigger stocking.
Okay.
Okay.
I can live with that.
Anyways, Tony says, I hope this gets you started. Bottom line, First Bites powdered food is my new favorite. And he put the link up for that so we can put that up. Feed live foods if you have a way to do it, but the powdered food might just be enough. The fry will do best if they grow up in an established tank full of Java moss or similar. Remove the adults to another tank after spawning, or else just move them back and forth between two tanks every 3 weeks or so until you see fry. A nice snail in each tank, like a nerite, is smart since they will keep the tank cycled and will also promote the growth of infusoria. I say skip the filter, but keep the water quality good. I would do 20% per week.
Yeah, very good suggestions. Mm-hmm. And advice for Scott. One question I had, do you put the nerite in before you see the fry or after you see the fry?
Are they just in there the whole time?
That's what I'm wondering. Lots of snails will eat fish eggs like crazy. Nerite seem more herbivorous than most snails. Most snails are kind of eclectic in their tastes and will eat
whatever they come across.
But I'm just wondering about that. When exactly you would introduce the nerite snail? Or if you can leave it in, because if they don't seem to bother Killy eggs. I mean, Killy eggs are rather tough, and as I said, nerites are rather herbivorous. So
it might work out okay?
Might work out okay anyway. I'm just wondering about that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and he says for Scott to report back to the show so that he can follow his progress. So,
thank you, Tony. I'm sure Scott thanks you as well.
Yes. So we are on Mick. He says, hi, guys. Just a short note to say, hope you all have a great time this Christmas. Thanks for another brilliant Aquarimax year with great guests, a nonstop regular podcast, even through technological issues and ill health. Huzzah. Thank you.
And we did have kind of a little stop here at the end, but hey.
We did. Oh, did we talk about that already?
Yes.
About why that was? Okay.
Yes.
So I don't have to go over that again.
Thing.
Yeah. He said, I just wanted to share my excitement at my Axies spawning last Monday. I brought them into the house around 6 weeks ago from the outdoor tub, and as the females were starting to look plump, I added some spawning mops to the tank. Several weeks with no action. Then, just as I had left the tank alone for nearly 2 weeks due to a winter virus, me, not the Axies, I thought to myself, I better do a water change and filter clean in there tomorrow. Bingo! Next day, trails of spawn all over, except on the mops. Naughty thing.
We'll show you putting these mops in our tank.
So I have taken out a lump of bogwood they laid on into a small hatching tank and left it in the living room so we can watch the eggs develop over the next 2 to 3 weeks.
That is cool.
Yeah, that will be fun with his little daughter. They can all watch the little eggs.
Yeah. He sent some pictures, which I will post.
Oh, good.
On the show page, so if you would like to see them. It's very cool. I think axolotls are very interesting creatures.
Mm-hmm. They are cool. Mm-hmm. Oh, and he signs it Mick from the one and only Carnforth, UK. Okay, we have Dr. Bob.
Yes, we do.
He says, a few weeks ago I wrote about newly acquired fish from mail order having issues with bacterial infections. I noticed that of all the locally caught fish, not one has suffered from infections. I recently acquired several each of blue-spotted sunfish and American flagfish, Jordanella floridae. Yes, I know that the flagfish are not local, but I have been having difficulty keeping up with the algae growth on my native plants, and I know that flagfish are great natives for algae control.
Very true.
Within a week of placing these new fish in quarantine, 80% of the fish were dead due to a columnaris bacterial infection.
That's a nasty one.
Yeah. It seems to me that the new fish from other waters have difficulty with the native Flavobacterium columnare that is ubiquitous in our freshwater pond.
That makes a lot of sense. It seems that fish tend to build immunity quickly to things they're exposed to a lot over, you know, period of generations like that. But put a fish in that hasn't had any chance to do anything, and it will. Often, that's even true in a tank. So that makes sense that it would be happening in his situation, too.
He says, my quarantine tank is set up with a simple corner filter with just enough gravel to cover the bottom. I have several stems of hornwort to provide some cover. I cycled the tank with aged water from my native's tank, and I've done regular water 50%, regular water changes 50% since. So here's the question. Is it better to have a cycled quarantine tank or a sterile tank for new fish? My thinking is that maybe the fish need time to reduce stress before entering into the new environment with all of its strange microorganisms. So start with an uncycled or sterile tank, doing large water changes, then in a few weeks begin to add water from the native's tank to increase the number of microorganisms in the quarantine tank before transferring the new fish to the native's tank. What do you think?
Well, it makes a lot of sense to me. As long as you can do the water changes that are large enough to keep basically ammonia and nitrites at undetectable levels, then I think it really does make a lot of sense.
Could he... Also, I mean, he's starting his quarantine tank with water that already has the bacteria in it because it's aged water. Could he set up a quarantine tank just with other water that doesn't have that in it, like tap water that you start from the beginning and get it all cycled, and then slowly, when you do the water changes, introduce that so then they don't have to have it not cycled?
Right. You could do that.
I mean, if he has enough time ahead of time before he gets fish.
Obviously. Yeah, and that's one possibility. Yeah, that would be a possibility as well. I'm just thinking, if he's saying, can you do it without cycling the tank as long as you're keeping the water quality high? Mm-hmm. And I would say yes.
Okay.
It would be a lot of work in terms of water changes. Because you also have to test very frequently to make sure you're not getting ammonia or nitrite at detectable levels. Because if you are, you're stressing your fish out. And probably lowering their resistance to disease.
Right, so then when you do put it in, they're not going to be happy about it.
Right. But if you can maintain that, I think it works. So sounds good to me.
Sounds plausible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let us know what you do. So, Rob from Knoxville, Tennessee. He says, your latest interview with Diana Wallstead was an eye-opener, to say the least. I had no idea what Mycobacterium was, let alone how dangerous it can be not only to the inhabitants of the tank, but the aquarist as well. I've had some unexplained deaths in my fish tank. Things started a couple months ago when I noticed my peppered cory was lethargic on the bottom of the tank. I moved him into quarantine and he quickly died the next day. In the next few weeks, I lost the three other peppered cories and my otto, then two cardinal tetras. The death stopped until 3 days ago when my bronze cory was acting strange. He was swimming erratically to the surface for gulps of air. The next day he was dead. Previously, he showed no signs of distress or visible sickness. Today I found two harlequin rasborers were gasping and their mouths were disfigured. One of them has a ratty tail fin. I moved them to quarantine, but now I'm worried about losing the whole tank. At first I thought it was columnaris and treated with antibiotics, but after listening to the interview with Dana Wallstead and reading her article on Mycobacterium, I think my tank may be suffering from it. I guess the only way to be sure if my fish deaths are attributed to Mycobacterium is an autopsy, which seems ridiculous on such tiny fish.
And it is difficult to tell what it could be. I mean, it is possible that it is mycobacterium. The gasping doesn't sound particularly characteristic.
Yeah.
At the surface. I mean, once fish have reached an advanced stage of, you know, they have this mycobacteriosis, they'll often have respiratory distress. But that's one thing to think about. Okay, so sorry about that. Unexplained phone ringing problems.
Well, he's asking, he says, so is mycobacterium as prevalent as she theorizes and just part of the hobby? Or should I break down the tank and destroy everything and start over? Most of my fish and plants came from my local fish store. What's to say that they are not infected? How do you quarantine for something that may take months to years to manifest? What's to say any fish or plants you get from anywhere aren't harboring it? Am I just freaking out and overreacting?
Okay, well, Diana Wallstad is one of the ones who has brought it to our attention, but it's well documented that the Mycobacterium genus is well represented in all sorts of places, in aquaria, in swimming pools, in municipal plumbing, in all kinds of things. It's all over the place. In terms of it being part of the hobby at a disease state, now that's something we can minimize. The fact that the bacteria are out there in the environment all over, in dirt, you know, everywhere, mm-hmm. That's something we can't get away from. But we can do things to minimize the symptomatic cases in our fish. And I think breaking down the tank and destroying everything and starting over, I know that some people recommend that, but from what I understand in discussions with Diana Ballstadt and with my reading on the subject is that there are going to be a certain number of them in the aquarium anyway. Soon after you set it up, they're going to appear if they're not already there.
You can't get away from it.
So trying to completely rid your tank of them is essentially impossible because it's not going to last. But you can minimize the numbers through things like making sure that that lipidy proteinaceous scum doesn't form on the surface. You know, make sure you have surface agitation, make sure you use proper filtration and so on to get rid of that. UV filtration is a really good idea to help reduce it. And so I would say that rather than quarantining for mycobacteriosis, I don't recommend doing it particularly. I mean, it's good to quarantine your fish for a reasonable period of time, but you can't really quarantine effectively for mycobacteriosis. What you can do is use a sentinel fish, put a healthy fish from your existing fish population in a quarantine tank with other fish and see if it develops mycobacteriosis. Because the fish that you purchased may well have some degree of immunity to it and not be symptomatic at all. But if you put a fish that hasn't been exposed to it in with them, it may get it. And if you put those apparently healthy fish in your main system with all your other fish, you might well infect them all. It's better to infect one of your existing fish than infect all of them.
Right.
So the sentinel fish idea that Diana Wallstadt suggests makes a lot of sense to me for that reason. And as long as, I mean, there's always going to be some risk, but I'd say as long as you get fairly healthy fish, you quarantine them for a reasonable period of time, and you do everything to keep keep their immune systems up. Make sure you don't have scum on the surface of the water. Make sure you move dead fish so other fish don't eat them or pick on them before you remove them. You know, remove them immediately when they do happen. And keep UV filtration on the tank. You can go a long way towards reducing mm-hmm. problems.
And it kind of goes out with his next question, too. He says, I've been planning on upgrading my setup to a larger tank. It's currently a 20-gallon. I'm now down to 10 small fish after the die-off, so starting over fish-wise wouldn't be that big of a deal. But I have plants I've had since I started the hobby. Would dipping the plants and running a UV sterilizer on the new tank be enough? So I think, like you said, if he's just doing the things you went through.
Right. If he does all those things.
You shouldn't have to start all the way over.
And I wouldn't dip the plants like in a bleach treatment, because what that tends to do is kill off beneficial bacteria that would otherwise help outcompete the environmental mycobacteria.
But it doesn't kill
them. Alcohol kills them, but alcohol can also kill plants. So I would say, UV sterilizer.
Okay.
Do that, as well as the other things that I said.
Okay. Well, good luck.
Yeah, and let us know what you decide to do.
Oh, and we have our last one is second email from Tony.
Okay.
You mentioned.
Sounds good.
He says, "Happy New Year. Congratulations on your first New Year in the new home. So, Russ, I re-listened to the most recent podcast and think that fairy shrimp eggs with killifish is a brilliant idea. Daphne are easy, but this sounds even easier. Also, instead of converting my 6.6 to a brackish tank, I've decided to set up a 1-gallon marine tank. It's bubbling away as we speak. I transferred an egg-covered decoration from the main tank to the 1-gallon. No baby snails yet. Wish me luck. There is no algae in the tank, as far as I know, which is unfortunate, but I think I'll try adding powdered algae chips and see what happens. I'll keep you up to date as this progresses. Just my brief update for the week."
Cool. I would say a couple of things. One, that's cool that he's starting the experiment to see what the nerites are going to do and whether they will reproduce. One thing I might suggest is see if you can get some phytoplankton from the pet store. You know, go to your local fish store and look for... There are several different kinds and several different forms. You can get it as live phytoplankton, which you probably don't need in this case, but you can also get just kind of a phytoplankton soup. It's just basically algae suspended that you can keep in your fridge and put in a few drops in the tank. And I've used it when I've had marine tanks.
That's a good idea.
And you could use that, and I bet they would eat that.
That's a good idea.
Makes sense. And it would, because it stays suspended, and that's the idea. That's how they need it at first, until they turn into snails.
Okay.
When they're in their villager form, they need it that way. So.
Villager?
Villager. V-E-L-I-G-E-R.
Did we talk about that last time?
We probably did.
That's a funny name.
I think we did. I don't know. Anyway, that's okay. What they call it, villager. Not villager, but villager.
They don't go pillaging, huh?
No, they go veliging.
They go veliging.
Or pelaging. I don't
pelaging?
Know. They go pelaging because they're pelagic. Okay. I don't know. That's a little weird, huh?
Okay. That's okay. That's what sets us apart. We're weird.
Oh, okay. I like that. Well, I wanted to say I'm sorry it's taken so long to get another episode out. It's not entirely our doing because there were other things beyond our control. But, you know, and then the holidays come and there are all sorts of things going on. But anyway... We hope that you forgive us and we're back. And so, we would also like to say we hope you have a happy new year, if it is a new year in your part of the world. I know some of you are going to have a new year a little later. May the fish
be with you.